Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. Our guest today is David Morris, songwriter, journalist. He's going to discuss his career path leading up to 2019 and beyond. 2019, he was named the International Bluegrass Music Association Writer of the Year for written words. David writes very good songs. He's very successful at it. We're going to listen to one of his very first chart-topping tunes, Weeds, from Atkins and Loudermilk. Then we'll get into part one of our discussion with David Morris. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. Well, we just listened to a song by my next guest, Weeds, by Atkins and Loudermilk. It's on their self-titled album, and that leads me to the wonderful pleasure of introducing my friend, Dave Morris. How are you, Dave?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you again. Weeds, I think, might have been your first grasp at the gold ring. I want to talk about your career leading up to this. Not only is David a songwriter, he's a writer. As a matter of fact, in 2019, he was given the Writer of the Year Award by the International Bluegrass Music Association, and it wasn't for writing a song, but we're going to kind of talk about Dave's transition from a different life to the life of a songwriter, performer, and writer. So Weeds, I think, might have played a significant part.
Yeah, Weeds was my first number one. I wrote it with my friend Chris Dawkins. Pitched it to Dave Atkins at IBMA the same day I got the demo back from Stephen Mogen. And he liked it and said, I want it, and it was the easiest pitch I've ever made. But it took a painfully circuitous route to number one, and it came totally by surprise. The day it topped the charts, the Bluegrass Today chart, I didn't even look because, you know, there was no reason for me to look. Weeds had snuck onto the charts in the teens for a couple of weeks and then fell. And then all of a sudden, there it was at number one. And much to my surprise, I'll take it.
I mean, heck yeah, you'll take it. It's a great song, and I'm very familiar with Atkins and Loudermilk, together and apart. And we'll talk about another tune that David recorded a little bit later as we go through our discussion today. But for the people listening, Dave Morris, talk about a circuitous route. Interesting path to becoming what I think now, Dave, if I'm correct, is your full-time avocation of songwriting and writing things about music. Get us up to speed on how that happened.
Well, I spent most of my career as a traditional daily journalist, working for newspapers, working for the Associated Press. I spent 25 years in Washington covering national politics. I got a gig for 2.5 years, the best and worst gig I ever had, chief White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Great gig because you get to see the world, and you know, you're a witness from the front row of, you know, in a lot of historic events. The worst job in the world, because your suitcase is always packed and you're at somebody else's beck and call. In this case, the president, when he wants to travel, you go, and you can't say, oh, my anniversary is sorry. So,
you can, David, but only once.
But only once, exactly. living out of a suitcase is, you know, it's great, and it's, as many musicians know, there's also a huge, painful downside. So the end of 2016, Dawn Kenny, who's one of my favorite co-writers, calls me and she says, we have an opportunity next week in Nashville to write with, and she drops the name of a big bluegrass star. And I'm like, I have used up all of my vacation time. I can't do it. And it really frosted me that I couldn't do it. As it turned out, it didn't happen. The health reasons of one of the people involved, but it sort of made my mind up to get out. So I went back to work after New Year's and told my bosses, I was the deputy managing editor at the Kiplinger Letter at the time, told my bosses that I was retiring. They asked me to stay on until April. I did, and I've been. That was April of 2017, right after President Trump took office. And I've been doing music full-time ever since. And to answer your next question, no, I don't miss it at all.
Well, you did it, man. You did it at the highest level, and you were very successful, and people could have caught David on TV on different channels, and I bet you really enjoyed the election coverage nights.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, for me as a political junkie, that's what you live and die for, and I still have my hand in that a little bit. I do some consulting work for ABC News at election time, so I keep a hand in it, but it's not my day-to-day thing anymore.
You are you're deep, what we call deep cover, David. You're deep cover at this point. You're always ready to spring into action and you'll be right there. Listen, the writing. Let me touch a little bit more on the Writer of the Year from IBMA in 2019. I was so happy that you and I have kind of known each other. We did a little panel a couple of years ago, which I enjoyed thoroughly. It was fun. The Writer of the Year, then, that was not for a song, but for what, David? And you write other things, and we'll get back to a song here in just a second.
Sure. The Writer of the Year, unlike Songwriter of the Year, Writer of the Year used to be called the Print Reporter of the Year. This is the first time that they called it Writer of the Year. So it's basically for music journalism. I write for Bluegrass Today, and I have since its inception in 2011. I started writing for its predecessor, the Bluegrass Blog, which some of your listeners may remember, in 2010. And again, everything in my life seems to be, happy accidents. I met John Lawless from Bluegrass Today, and when I won a contest, a video contest, sponsored by Barry Bales for hauling your upright bass around.
Wow.
And
we should mention you're primarily, if you're going to see David playing, which he does perform, it's going to be on bass.
Mostly. I write on the guitar, of course, but mostly when you catch me in my rare stints on stage, I usually am hiding behind the upright.
Okay, all right. So you win this contest, and then you meet John Lawless, who many of us have known forever and ever and ever, and we'll go back to the old list server days, David, of Accutab and the publications that John was involved in. We all were, this was before there were these instant internet connections. You'd put in a post and wait for someone to respond or not. And John ran a very successful, I thought the best was called Accutab, and then he moved on to other things, and he moved on to meeting David Morris, which was a good day for him.
Another one of those things that, I covered my first IBMA in 2010. I've been to everyone since, and I've written for Bluegrass Today at everyone since the last couple of years. It's gotten a little more complicated because I have a lot of other hats to wear there online, mainly as a songwriter, as a publisher, and as an occasional putter togetherer of panels, to use the technical term.
That's good.
So it's been a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing that for a long time.
You mentioned earlier as we were talking about Weeds, which I guess could be your, we wanted to say, well, which is definitely your first number one. We'll call it that as for reference. And that is something that happens at the IBMA conferences, is that songwriters and performers like you will bring demos and, and connect with people who might want to record them. And that's a facet of IBMA that maybe the casual attendee is not aware of, but people like Dave Morris and other writers will show up and have other things to do, and David's very active, but you also will have songs that have just come to you that you're trying to put in the hands of someone else who might want to record them. That to me is a neat underground movement that I see. I'm aware of it because I know what's happening.
Yeah, it's one of those making the sausage things that goes on behind the scenes, and people see and hear the finished product but don't see and hear how it comes together.
We mentioned Atkins and Loudermilk before. And I guess then, is Turn and Burn, who David Atkins is a regular contributor to Unreal Bluegrass, was Turn and Burn off of his self-titled album, would have been the next song that you thought would have gotten the greatest amount of attention to let the world know that David Morris is here to stay? Or one of them?
Well, it was definitely one of them. It was Dave's second solo record after Atkins and Loudermilk broke up, and Weeds actually became a hit after the band broke up. So sadly, they both have solo bands, and Edgar Loudermilk and Dave Atkins. And sadly, Weeds no longer gets performed by either band.
Oh.
I hear it every once in a while. Kyle Cantrell is good enough to like it and to play it, and I hear it every once in a while on the radio or on satellite radio. But we had Don Kenny and I wrote two songs with Dave on his first post duo record. And then Don and I and Dave wrote Turn and Burn, which actually was the second, now that I remember it, that's the second song on that record. So, yeah, we wrote a song called Russell Fork River, and we wrote this song called Turn and Burn. Dave used to be a truck driver.
Yes, he did.
So we wrote a trucker song, and we were fortunate enough to have that one go to number four on the Bluegrass Today charts, and Dave plays the fire out.
He does, and it's perfect. And it's perfect for him. If people don't know David, you would think, yeah, he would be a truck driver, nicest guy in the world. But he certainly fits the bill. Let's take a minute, David, and for the people listening, we're going to play "Turn and Burn," recorded by Dave Atkins and written with the help of Dave Morris, our guest today. All right, there you just heard "Turn and Burn," a tune we were just talking about with Dave Morris, recorded by Dave Atkins, who is very active. That's a very energetic, upbeat song, and I think it fits David's personality right. So you married up with the right performer on that one.
Yeah, I met Dave in Roanoke, Virginia. He played in a band called Republic Steel, and they were the opening act for at a fundraiser for Herschel Sizemore, a well-known mandolin player who had, he and his wife both had cancer, and a bunch of musicians got together and did a big fundraising concert for him. And a song that I had written for another band was being debuted at that thing, and I went because I wanted to hear it. And I was backstage talking to some friends, and I heard this big booming voice on stage. It's like, I got to go see who that is. And it was Dave Atkins. And we just hit it off, and we hung out together. We started writing songs together, and it just took off from there. One of my favorite things to do is to write with an artist, because if the artist likes the song you wrote, you're pretty much guaranteed having a spot on the record.
Good point. Good point. And did you ever know why the spelling of Republic Steel, which was David's band then, did you ever know why it was spelled so oddly?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's named after an old steel mill, steel company.
And they didn't like the fact that he was. That's hysterical to me that they would even care.
Yeah.
But yeah, had some different letters in it for Republic Steel.
Yep.
Let me ask you then. We've heard Weeds. We just heard Turn and Burn. We're going to hear one more as we exit out of this from Valerie Smith. But about the songwriting process, and you mentioned co-writers and writing with artists. The songwriting process is fascinating to me because I could never in a million years do it. But give me a little bit of what goes into your head as you're thinking about who I'm going to write with and how that changes the approach.
Well, the approach differs. First of all, it's completely different if I'm writing alone than if I'm writing with one or two other people. But generally, I start with an idea, and I am much more organized now than I used to be. My ideas tend to be in one place on my phone. In the old days, I had titles on napkins, on business cards, on matchbooks, on little scraps of paper all over the house, and my wife knew not to throw them out because those scribbled two or three words that made no sense to anybody else meant the world to me.
They were gold. Those were gold.
Right. And so I keep all my ideas, and when I'm getting ready to write, I sort through my ideas. If I'm writing with someone else, I try to think what the artist... My goal is to always write the song that the artist doesn't have.
Interesting.
Because there's a lot of competition in the songwriting world out there. And, I'm going to have much better luck giving an artist a song in a style or a speed that he doesn't have or she doesn't have than if I give her another song that she has 10 others just like it. I much prefer, having the better odds of giving them what they don't have. And sometimes that's just a matter of asking. I get calls from artists saying, hey, I'm getting ready to go in the studio. Do you have anything for me? And that's usually my first question. What do you need that you don't have? And that, 9 times out of 10, is what I'm going to write. So then you just, I tend, as hard as it is, I try not to think too much about that title if I know in advance that that's where I want to go, because I want to hear what the other people in the room have to say. And I think if you go in committed to and overthinking and over-preparing a certain thing, you're going to miss maybe a better approach that somebody else has. So I like to listen first, just go in the room and say, Steve, how you doing today? What's on your mind? What are you thinking about? And then I like to do what we call writing the song in the room. Something that one of us says often displaces the idea. It's not that the idea was bad. It's just that this one is better. And Weeds was like that. Weeds was in, the chorus of Weeds was in my notebook for about 4 years.
Wow.
And I liked it. I just didn't know. I just, every time I sat down to do something with it, it wasn't the right time. And I couldn't figure out what to do with it as a solo writer. Chris and I wrote a song that he had in mind. We finished it up. We had an hour before he had to go get his boy from Little League practice. So he says, what do you got? Let's start one of yours. And I just handed him my notebook, which I had memorized. And he literally opened it at random to that page and said, oh, this is pretty cool. And an hour later, we had a song.
If you're just tuning in, talking to Dave Morris, songwriter, writer, all kinds of neat stuff in David's career up to this point, and much more to come, I'm certain. But I would think, David, as you're talking about the songwriting process where I just jumped in, I would think that in order to be good at this, you have to be willing to subjugate or leave your ego outside. Like you said, you may have a title, you may have a page, someone, but you have to recognize that you can't, especially when you're co-writing, that it can't be just everything Dave Morris wants to do, and you also have to be willing to recognize somebody else has a more workable idea.
Exactly. That's the biggest issue I find when I write with newer songwriters, is they don't want to let go. You know, they say, well, I'll try to write this with you, but if it doesn't work, I'm going to take it back. Well, A, it doesn't work that way, and we're going to make it work. So just banish that thought. Yeah, you have to be, you know, you become part of a team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think every good songwriter has painfully left some great things on the cutting room floor to serve the song that is being written at the time. Now, I don't lose them. I go back in my notebook and may become useful later, whether it's a line or a verse or whatever. And sometimes they're gone. You know, you put them in there and they never see the light of day again. But if the song is great in the end, that's all that matters. And it doesn't matter. I don't count words. I don't count lines.
That's good. That was my next question. Is do you think about this was my phrase or that was my melody? And I think what you answered before I got there is that you really can't.
I'll be honest. I used to, but the bottom line is, even if it's something, if you and I are in a room writing together, and even if I come up with this great line, and you think, wow, that's the best line ever written in the history of songs, we still might not have gotten there, I might not have gotten there, if you hadn't said something earlier that led me down that path. So it's a true collaboration. I split my songs, you know, equally. Either in half or in thirds, depending on whether there's two or three of us in the room, and don't figure out who did what and how many words this person was responsible for and who did the melody. And some in pop, you know, you get like, you know, you get 7% and I get 24% and you get, you know, 6.5%. Who knows? You know, if your only contribution is a great title. We wouldn't have written that song without you spitting out that
point. Oh, that's a good.
So
that's
you,
a good
you
point.
Get half the song.
That's a good point. That's a good point, David. I'm always fascinated by this part of the process because, like I said, I do not get it at all. I know you're working on new things. We had just exchanged a little bit of information that'll come out in the upcoming year. You're always working on new songs, but what do you think? And then we're going to get to Valerie Smith, one of my favorite songs, by the way. Tell them a little bit about what's coming up and can be expected in the year 2020.
Well, it has the potential to be my best year yet. And early in the year, probably in February, the Family Soul is coming out with a gospel record. Ben Isaac is producing. Anything Ben touches in the gospel world is golden. So I'm really eager to see what he does with that. I have two songs on that record. It's not a gospel CD. It's a band record. But I've been writing a lot of gospel, and my first bluegrass gospel recording is coming out on that record. Hmm. And I'm really excited about it. That it's a young family band. They have a lot going for them.
They have so much exuberance and passion.
Yes, yes. And
every smile is genuine.
It is. I wrote a song for another band. I was writing for an artist, and I asked him what he didn't have, and he said, I need sort of an upbeat gospel song. So I wrote this for this other band, and the band leader was sort of lukewarm about it and decided not to record it. So I wrote it with my good friend Mary Eichler. It was another one of those songs that we just, because the other band was already in the studio, we were on a kind of a tight leash. We wrote it in one afternoon, did a quick work tape, sent it off, and they turned it away. So I sent it to Cindy Stowell, the mom, the sort of the manager.
Oh yeah.
And the next thing I know, they're cutting it, and I've gotten to hear them play it live a couple of times. I'm really eager to hear the recorded version and see what Ben's production brings to it. I'm really excited about that one. I've got four or five other songs in the process of being recorded and that will be released later this year.
Okay, we'll wait for that.
And in my other life, in addition to still writing for Bluegrass Today, this is my 10th year writing about bluegrass music. So I'm putting together I call it a loose compilation of my music journalism over the last 10 years. A loose compilation because it's not just the stories that I wrote for Bluegrass Today, but they're updates. If you know, things that I wrote about, and then I update what's happened since.
Okay.
And there are a couple of other essays that I've published elsewhere that will appear in that. And my goal is to have that out sometime this summer.
Nice.
And it'll be next summer, 2020.
2020. Right.
And the working title is "The Night Grown Men Cried." And other tales from the Bluegrass Trail. The Night Grown Men Cried was the headline on my Bluegrass Today article and the entirety of a tweet that I sent when Tony Rice spoke in his at IBM accept his induction into the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Well, you have
tweeted it.
Go ahead.
I tweeted that, and then I wrote the story and used that as the headline, and that's going to be the title of the book.
You will have to let me know when that becomes available.
Absolutely.
As soon as possible. David, I want to thank you so much for your time, and I want to leave with a tune you can, as we're heading out, we're going to hear something about a train, and I know that there's a little bit of a story with that, Valerie Smith and her band, and it's a wonderful song. I've played it so many times I might know the words, but tell us a little bit about that song, and then I will say goodbye to you in the audience. As David Morris is leaving, we'll hear something about a train.
So Dawn started writing this with a friend of ours, Mitch Matthews. We all met at a song circle in IBMA in 2011, and we had been threatening to write together, and they started this song, and they came to me and said, we're not quite sure where to go with this. Do you want to come in? And so, you know, I took a listen, and it's like, yeah, let's work on it. So we work it up, and I was very happy with, we all were very happy with the way it came out. And we did a demo. Troy Engel, who was a former Nashville performer, you can actually see him on the TV show Nashville, and now moved back home into southeastern Pennsylvania, so he's not far from me. Troy did a wonderful demo of that song. We did two things with it. I entered it in the Chris Austin Music Songwriting Contest at Merlefest, which is probably the premier roots music song contest anywhere.
I think that's accurate.
And I sent it. I actually played it at an IBMA song circle that Valerie ran, and she asked me to send it to her, so I sent it to her. We ended up winning the Chris Austin Songwriting Contest with that song in 2015. Dawn and I performed it, and that was, you know, sort of an eye-opening experience. It's the most people I've ever played in front of live. We were sandwiched between the Marshall Tucker Band and Sam Bush. Late on a Friday night. So I like to say that the Marshall Tucker Band opened for us. But, you know, which is sort of kind of maybe a little bit, it's not really true, but it sounds good.
It sounds great, and I think it's true. I'm going to believe it's true.
And we won that, and then we won that contest, and then Valerie recorded it. She recorded another song on her record that I also wrote. Something About a Train came out, and it got a lot of attention right off the bat from DJs through Airplay Direct, and then it sort of went into hibernation. And then about a month later, it started climbing the charts, and it was number one for a couple of weeks. So that was Dawn's first and my second. And you know, it's always fun hearing a song that you wrote on the radio, and that one I got to hear a lot, as well as Weeds. And I hope I never get tired of that feeling.
I hope so too, because I enjoy your music, and I know that, you know, that was almost a perfect song for Valerie. When you think about it, with her phrasing and the way she approaches songs, just her personality, that was almost a perfect song for her. Whether you knew it at the time you wrote it or not.
Now we have to find the next one.
Well, you can do that. David, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much, David Morris. As we're saying goodbye to my friend, songwriter, journalist, all kinds of neat stuff, David. So we're going to go right to that song we're talking about, Something About a Train. And, David, I'll catch you on the next trip somewhere.
Thanks so much, Steve. Take care.
See you, man. Bye.